Thank you very much, Ron, and a very happy Saturday evening, everyone. Hope you're having a great day. This is John Hansen, host of Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We have got some really fascinating stories to talk through, and Jeffrey Colwin's here. He does employment law, but we're going to be talking about privacy rights as well, and just some really interesting cases that have changed my whole way of thinking about some of the issues that we normally don't think about, whether it's doorbell cams or nanny cams. When are those okay to use? Do you have to tell your neighbors that you've got a Ring doorbell cam? Well, maybe so. In fact, someone's getting fined over $100,000 because they didn't tell their neighbor they've got a doorbell cam and a camera on their house. So you'll definitely want to tune into that a little bit later on. 312-981-7200 is the phone line, as you know, and we'll have our question of the day. I'll give it to you now and call on in if you've got the answer or if you just want to take a wild guess. Every day in America, 112,000 Americans get what? We'll hopefully answer that question sometime during today's show here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, next here on WGN. Well, very good Saturday evening. It just got better here at the WGN studios. You hear Jeffrey Colwin's going to be on here today. He's already in the building. Apparently, Iridian, he brought us a bunch of sweets, including cookies. And that's how a guest does it. Let all future guests who walk into this building here, 303 East Wacker, know that I think we'll just keep Jeffrey on even a little bit longer because of those cookies. That's how you get the goods of the host and the producer. Iridian producing across the glass. John Hansen here. This show's all about, in case you're just joining us here for the first time, I know we've been moving around a lot the last few weeks because of Northwestern football. This is a show that tackles issues pertaining to law, but we explain it with some of the most expert attorneys like Jeffrey Colwin and legal minds, and we try and do it in a way that is digestible for those of us like me who aren't lawyers. So if you ever have any questions along the way, and you're going to hear some dumb ones from me, trust me, over the next 2 hours, please chime in. This is an interactive show, 312-981-7200. It can be something that one of the lawyers say, that I say, a news story that we read about. If you don't know, I may not know, but we're going to try and get the answers for you. And one of the things we've been doing lately is a question of the day, kind of a random one that has some legal angle to it. Last week, we took to the end of the show, and it was a carryover from the previous week about how many people serve in juries in America every year. That was the answer. Today's question is, every day in America, 112,000 Americans, on average, get what? 312-981-7200, if you think you know the answer. We've had a few texts come in, but this is a call-in show, and you've got to call in to get the prize. The prize, by the way, is me representing you in a court of law at a future time. I'm not a lawyer, so use that wisely, or don't use it at all. But that's our joke prize. 312-981-7200. Every day in the United States, on average, 112,000 Americans get what? 312-981-7200. I'll let Iridian answer a couple of the calls that are coming in now, and I'll preview what we're going to be doing throughout the show today. We'll do our top five legal stories of the week after the commercial break, as well as get some of your answers that are filing in right now. We're going to talk about, as I mentioned at the top of the show, about invasion of privacy rules as it relates to nanny cams, as it relates to those Ring doorbells that so many people have, where they're pointed, where they shouldn't be pointed, and what can happen to you if you point it the wrong way, and about cameras inside of Airbnbs. You might be surprised to find out that some of the places you stayed at, and I know this freaks people out, and it shouldn't be happening, but we're going to talk about it. There might be cameras in your Airbnb that you're supposed to know about, but you'll want to know exactly what is legal and what is not as you go and stay in someone else's home. We're also going to talk about Supreme Court rulings potentially coming up here in Illinois about companies that collect your biometric information. So 312-981-7200. We got some answers here for the question of 112,000 Americans every day on average in America get what? And let's go to Noelle. Noelle, how are you doing here on this Saturday?
I am fine. We're sitting outside with a fire.
Oh, whoa. That's like a nice little bonfire going.
Yes. Oh, yes.
That is like my favorite thing. I'm so glad you're listening to us while you do that. I don't know if it's quite as fun bonfire entertainment as good old strumming on the guitar, but legal information is always fun. So what's your guess, Noelle?
My guess is get sued.
Get sued. That's a great guess. That was, in fact, Iridian's guess, too. No, that's not the answer. Although I'm really curious, Noel, what the answer to that is, because you would think it would be lower than 112,000 people a day. But this is America, so I don't know. Noel, I also love your name, so thank you so much for calling. Where are you calling from and having that fire, by the way?
Mooney, Illinois.
Love the folks in Mooney. Noel, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
312-981-7200. Vince, stay on the line. Others stay on the line, too. We'll try to get an answer to that question and our top five stories of the week. Legal stories here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. John Hansen here on this Saturday evening. We'll take you to 8 o'clock, and we started diving into the cookies. Cookies in the studio do not last long. And we'll talk to Jeffrey about where he got these made. But we have our first ever Let's Get Legal cookies. There's one cookie that has, like, the scales of justice. I'm showing it to Iridian. It's half-eaten, by the way. The left scale has prevailed. And then there's a little gavel and the thing that you pound the gavel on. Let's Get Legal cookies. We'll have to ask Jeff Colwin where he got these things. He'll be in studio in a little bit talking about employment law, cookies, and more. 112,000 Americans every single day on average get what? Let's go to Allie. Allie in Glenview. How are you doing, Allie?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What are you up to here on this Saturday evening?
Driving my three teenage kids around who don't have driver's licenses yet.
Well, as someone who has two brothers, I know my mom, who's listening, probably sympathizes with you. Thanks for all that you do, Mom. It's important, okay?
That's right, to all the moms.
All right, so 112,000 people a day. What happens, Allie?
My guess is gets arrested.
That's a good guess, right? That also seems a little high to me, but maybe not, right? Like, there's 300.
That was my thought. I had a few guesses, and I thought of arrested, and I was like, that does seem high, but the way things have been going lately, I'm going to go with that.
Right. I think the way things have gone lately, I think 112,000 people a day get arrested off an airplane. So that's what I feel like based on the news lately. That's not the answer, but good luck driving the kids around the rest of the night, okay?
Thank you. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Yeah, you too. Let's go to Tom. Tom, happy Saturday. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Where are you calling from here tonight, by the way?
I'm in my car on the way to Woodstock to see a Frank Sinatra impersonator.
Oh, that's cool. Something live music. I saw live music last night. I'll talk about it a little later on. It's just so nice to be able to do that. That'll be fun. All right. What's your guess? 112,000 people a day.
Just called for jury duty.
You know, that was our answer last week to a question that took forever. And the number is actually way lower than that. But that's a really good guess, Tom. You're just a week too late with that answer. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Have a good one, Tom. Thanks for calling. Enjoy the show, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Vince. Vince, where are you calling from tonight?
Melrose Park.
Melrose Park. Doing anything fun?
Working, delivering pizzas.
Hey, you're making other people's nights happy and merry, Vince. Yeah. All right, what's your guess for 112,000 people a day?
Tickets.
What kind of tickets?
Red light camera tickets.
You're so close, so I'm going to give you another chance on what kind of ticket.
Moving violations.
Yes, we'll go with moving violations. Going too fast. Speeding tickets. You got the answer. We didn't have to wait all that long. Now, have you ever gotten a speeding ticket, Vince?
Far too many.
Well, you're delivering those pizzas. You're trying to get them out as quick as you can. Yes, the answer is speeding tickets. And, Vince, congratulations. You've won our prize, which is me representing you in court. And based on how many speeding tickets you say you had, maybe you'll be able to use that sooner than later.
Hopefully, never.
Yeah, no.
So, thanks. Hey, I appreciate the offer, though.
Yeah, no, trust me. You don't ever want to use it whether you're in trouble or not, because I'm not a lawyer. But, Vince, thanks for the call. Congratulations, and have a good rest of your night, okay?
You as well. Thank you.
Yeah, 112,000 speeding tickets on average issued every single year. When I was trying to figure out what the question should be already, and I was actually trying to figure out what's the percentage of people in the United States that have never gotten a speeding ticket, but it's really hard to actually quantify that because 112,000 people a day, you know, you multiply that by 365, but some of them are like Vince, and you're getting a couple of them on your own. I know there's people out there that have never gotten a speeding ticket. I've gotten two or three in my life, if I can remember correctly. But you know, the person I really want to hear from, 312-981-7200, if you've never gotten a speeding ticket or a parking ticket, if you are pristine in that, I want to hear from you, 312-981-7200. But that is our question of the day. It has already been answered. Towards the end of the show, I'll probably tee up the start of next week's question, because I like when it carries over. I love giving people a week to think about it. And while we've got those pencils and scorecards out about our show, we will be on next week at 1 o'clock for a one-hour show leading into Northwestern football. Okay, let's talk about the top five legal stories of the day, a new segment we're trying here, and we will have sound effects next week is my goal. A little intro, some music, a good voiceover. Ridian, do you want to provide the voiceover right now? You want to? No, she's slowly grabbing the microphone. Not really. All right, here's the top five law stories of the week. And we start with that tragic story dealing with Alec Baldwin and the fatal shooting on a movie set. Shooting the cinematographer, and was supposed to be obviously some sort of prop gun, and there was a huge malfunction. But it's led to a lot of questions legally over whether Alec Baldwin stands to face any criminal charges. And legal experts across the board, for the most part, and this according to Newsweek, generally think that there is an unlikely chance that he would face any charges, though it's not impossible. A senior lecturer at Harvard Law School, Nancy Gertner, says in order for there to be criminal charges, one would really have to show that he intentionally did this, which of course seems unlikely based on the facts as we know them now. But according to Matthew Nash, who's an attorney of law in California, he says that he could potentially face involuntary manslaughter charges if he was found to be reckless in the handling of the prop gun, or, for example, if he used the weapon. Even though, let's say, someone handed it to him, said, hey, but that prop isn't ready yet, don't use it, and he were to do that, like if there was some sort of recklessness on Alec Baldwin's part. But, of course, you know, this is all wild speculation right now, and we'll just have to wait how this plays out. But as a lot of you know, he may not face criminal charges, but, of course, there is civil liabilities. He could face lawsuits. The production company could, of course. I'd imagine some of those would come out. But, of course, that's secondary right now to what is a real tragic situation. All right, story number two has to do with this U.S. Supreme Court case, the Texas abortion case that we've talked about on this show a couple times, the law in Texas that essentially allows average, everyday Texans to sue people that they know administer abortions to someone after 6 weeks of pregnancy. And there was a stay on that for a while, and then the stay was lifted. And the Supreme Court on Friday did agree to hear on November 1st a challenge to this Texas law. But in the meantime, the law does remain in effect. The Supreme Court, as far as I understand, and that we've talked about here on the program, does have in its purview an opportunity to stay it, meaning to stop it while they wait for the consideration of the law. But they have said that they will let the law continue as it is right now, and they will hear some arguments on November 1st. Law story number three this week, the U.S. House of Representatives passing a biz-backed bill which adds protections for nursing moms. And by the way, this is a bipartisan law, and you don't say the words bipartisan about our United States Congress all too often, but the U.S. House passed a bill supported by the White House and major business groups that would extend workplace protections for nursing mothers to millions of workers. The House voted 276 to 149, 59 Republicans joining all the Democrats to advance the Providing Urgent Maternal Protections to Nursing Mothers Act. It's the PUMP Act, as it's called. If it clears the Senate, which folks think it will because the Democrats have the majority there and Republicans also have said that they will support it, it would require that employers with 25 or more employees provide that time and private space for nursing mothers. And I know so many of you out there probably work in a business where this is already done. So you're like, oh, of course this is done. Well, it's not required. And now this law would require that. The Affordable Care Act back in 2010 or Obamacare amended the Fair Labor Standards Act to extend those protections to certain workers, but it left out about 9 million people who are exempt from those protections. So this kind of says that if you have over 25 employees, you must provide this. We've been talking about vaccine mandates, of course, here locally with police and fire departments here in Chicago. But on a national level, Norfolk Southern, the train company, has actually moved, and they filed the lawsuit saying that the unions should not be able to sue about this vaccine mandate. And you're seeing in so many cases people suing against the vaccine mandate by their employers, by their city employers, private employers. Well, this is the employer suing ahead of time or filing a law in court blocking any potential lawsuit. They say that this COVID-19 vaccine mandate is just an adjustment. It's interpreted already in the laws that they have with the union, that there's already a safety protocol in place and that the union is already following those, and this is just one adjustment. And the fact that President Biden's ruling and the mandate says that everyone has to get vaccinated or do the twice weekly testing or whatever, they want to just nip this in the bud and have a court go ahead and say in advance that employees cannot sue this Norfolk Southern Railway Company. And story number five, the U.S. Senate has confirmed only the sixth Native American ever to the federal bench. Another bipartisan vote in the Senate, 55-44, a few Republicans joining the Democrat majority have confirmed Lauren King to serve as a federal judge in Seattle. She's only the sixth Native American ever to sit on the bench in the federal judiciary's 232-year history, which is pretty incredible. Native Americans have been, and this is the second one appointed by President Biden that's been confirmed by the Senate. President Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, and President Trump nominated Native Americans, at least one nominee, each one confirmation. There's only a couple other active Native American judges currently sitting in federal court, but now there will be another one. All right, those are our top five legal stories here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I have talked enough on this program. Jeffrey Colwin, the man with the cookies, is coming in. We're going to talk about all sorts of employment, privacy, non-disclosure agreement rules coming up in just a little bit here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. After the news on WGN, Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association here on 720 WGN. Thanks so much for joining us here on this Saturday evening. Our guest, Jeffrey Colwin. I can help you out with those headphones during the break, Jeffrey. You don't need them right now.
I think I got it.
We spent time talking the entire break and I didn't get them prepped for the segment. I've been eating the cookies you brought in. Where'd you get these, Jeff?
Those cookies are from Sweet Mandy Bees in Lincoln Park. Have you ever been?
Oh, yes. They do great work. But do they have these as like a preset? They have the scales of justice on one cookie and the gavel on the other. Is this a preset they have, or did you have to order these special for us, Jeff?
I ordered them special for you.
Thank you. And Iridian.
And Iridian, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Jeffrey Colwin, you do a lot of employment law. You know, we also be talking about privacy rights and from Colwin, Mashapinto, and Colwin. And we were talking in the break about, and boy, this is an ongoing topic, the power the American worker has right now. Not universally, but in many, many industries, they are really in the driver's seat. And that mixed with COVID and all these new rules and regulations, vaccines, yay, nay, mask, whatever, it must be a fascinating time to be someone who really focuses on employment law.
It is interesting, John. I think what you're seeing is a realignment of resources. You have employers who are valuing good work from employees, and employees all of a sudden have choices about where they want to work.
Mm-hmm. I wondered if, you know, obviously at any point, I think employees should be aware of their rights and know when their employer is overstepping, whether it's a privacy law, non-disclosure agreements like we'll talk about later on, or any workplace violation. But now, maybe more than ever, I think every employee should really take stock of the way their employer treats them and know their rights now, especially because it's a little easier to walk now.
Well, you have options. I think maybe in other job markets you did not. And I think the takeaway from all of that is that employees need to make sure that they look out for themselves. They need to know what their rights are before they enter into the employment relationship, before it's too late.
Do you see a lot more business or people coming in just with complaints or claims over the last few years as more and more workers start to realize what those rights are?
I think that the raising of awareness of employee rights does alert people to the fact that they've got an issue or a concern at work.
Mm-hmm.
I think employers also are a little more sensitive to that issue, and maybe that helps balance things out.
What do you mean they're more sensitive to it, that they are aware that the employee knows their rights now and they really try and be you know, be legally in line with what they're supposed to be doing?
I think so. I think there's a reason to discuss it. And I think it separates some employers from others. And I think that an employee who is advised of their rights and enters into an employment relationship with their eyes open generally will have a better experience than the other way around.
For sure. All right, let's dive into some things here, these really interesting stories. And one here out of Illinois about workers' privacy rights as it relates to their biometric data. First of all, what sorts of employers collect biometric data? And what sort of biometric data are we talking about here, Jeff?
In today's environment, more and more employers are collecting biometric data. Do you know what biometric data is?
I assume fingerprints is one thing, right?
Yes, there's physiological characteristics like fingerprints and your face and your hand. There's also behavioral biometric data, such as your gestures or your typing rhythm or even the way that you walk.
Wait, wait. Employers are collecting this data on us?
There are programs that allow employers to monitor employees remotely based on if they're using their computer, how long has it been since they moved their mouse, things like that.
Are you kidding me?
I wish I was, but I am not.
How often I move my mouse or how fast I'm typing. Now, what sort of disclosure does an employer have to give an employee here in Illinois that sort of data is being collected?
There's a law here in Illinois. It's called the Illinois Biometric Information Privacy Act, and it was enacted in 2008. And it's actually one of the toughest laws in Illinois concerning the protection of biometric data. And generally, under the law, an employer is required to get informed consent before they start collecting biometric data. They're required to keep biometric data in a particularly safe way. And most importantly, they're prohibited from profiting off of that biometric data.
So selling it to a third party that would want to use it for data gathering or something along those lines and have it be tied either to a specific person or even generally speaking about how people perform in an office space.
Sure.
So informed consent, what does that mean?
Informed consent is notice in writing that this information is being collected, what will be done with it, and how it's protected.
And consent would imply that the person has to say yes, although they can't. Can they tie it to your employment status, meaning that if you don't want to agree to it, they do have the right to dismiss you?
Now, we've talked about this a few times. We live in an at-will state, which means that the employers set the rules. I think the key thing about the law is that it requires employers to notify employees that this information is being collected and to treat it a particular way.
If someone feels like they're, by the way, I don't know how you'd find out that your company wasn't doing things properly. I guess number one would be you find out from a coworker, hey, they're recording you and you never heard about it. Is that immediately something that's finable against the company or you can collect damages on? Or do you have to show, hey, I've been harmed by some way by my employer? What's the navigation for that in the court system?
The law was enacted in 2008, and everything was pretty quiet with the law until 2015 when the Supreme Court ruled that an employee has a cause of action under the statute, even if they don't suffer actual harm. What you're talking about, mm-hmm. A fine, I believe it's $1,000 or $5,000 for a willful violation of the Biometric Privacy Act. And so that's what's being litigated here in Illinois right now. Can an employee bring a cause of action for the violation of their biometric privacy rights? Typically, what happens is that employers start using these devices, fingerprint scans for time clocks and things of that nature, before they get the implied consent. And that's where employers seem to be getting tripped up.
In fact, one of the cases in this Rosenbach versus Six Flags had to do it with that. It was the fingerprint sign-in, right?
Exactly.
And what was the suit about? The fact that they had sold the data or allegedly had sold the data? Or was it about just the general disclosure of that information?
The lawsuit was essentially about the fact that to get into Great America, you had to give a biometric identifier, and there was no informed consent. The plaintiff sued in a class action lawsuit because Six Flags was violating the statute. And the defense to the case was that the employees didn't suffer any actual harm. They weren't mm-hmm. damaged by the fact that they were giving up this biometric data. And the Supreme Court ruled that you don't need actual harm to have a cause of action under the statute. I think that after that ruling, there were something like 150 cases filed in the few months following the ruling, more than had been filed in the 10 years before that Supreme Court case.
So if someone feels like they've given up biometric data or has a hunch that it's being used the wrong way and they were never informed of all this, what, should they be reaching out to their HR department first? Or is that like someone they should be calling you immediately?
I would say that if you're giving up biometric information and you have not been provided with informed consent, you should consider calling a lawyer.
And where can we reach you if someone's stepping out of the car or they're heading out and they can't listen to the rest of our segment? We're going to be on with Jeff until at least 7:30. Where can they reach you guys at?
Sure. They can find us on social. They can find me on social media, or you can call me direct, 312-374-5305.
Do you have cookies for everyone when they come into the office? You might have to start doing that here.
Well, I'm glad you like them. Only for you, John.
Very good. Hey, let's take a quick break and we'll get to more, including I'm just blown away at how many people have Ring doorbell cams, nanny cams. Maybe they have cams and they have an Airbnb. And you really have to be careful, both as the person that has the camera and also as someone walking into those situations, knowing or not knowing whether there are cameras. We're going to talk about privacy rights after this. And we also want to take your phone calls, 312-981-7200. If it's something about employment law, if it's something about privacy, anything that you've heard us talking about so far, 312-981-7200. Love to dive in more here with Jeffrey Colwin after this on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We are joined by leading employment attorney Jeffrey Colwin from Colwin, Mashapinto & Colwin, and we're talking about privacy rights now, including doorbell cameras. This is fascinating. Now, this is out of the UK, so you'll have to help us out a little bit, Jeff, with rules here in Illinois or in the U.S., but a judge of the United Kingdom has ruled that a man infringed on his neighbor's privacy by using an Amazon Ring doorbell without prior consent. Now, according to The Guardian, he had installed Ring doorbell cameras on the front of his home, where a lot of people have them, and another one facing the side yard to help deter burglars after a string of car break-ins. So I can understand that, right? You're like, all right, I want them all over the house. Well, his neighbor, he didn't tell his neighbor, and the neighbor was alarmed and appalled, realizing that he had recordings featuring her and her voice, and of course, go right to his smartphone. So eventually he had to pay fines of like £100,000, like $137,000 is the ruling. So what is the laws here in Illinois in terms of doorbell cams, where they're facing, and who you have to let know? I know that's a broad question.
No problem. These doorbell cams are everywhere.
Yeah.
John, I think there were something like 3 million of them sold in 2020, and the market for them is expected to grow by 20% this year.
And they've solved crimes too. Like, there have been good uses for them, and people catch people stealing packages. I get the appeal of them, but what about the law about it?
The law is pretty clear on doorbell cameras. The case that you're talking about was fascinating out of England. They have a law that says that if you're going to use a Ring doorbell camera, you have to consult with your neighbor and let them know. Mm-hmm. It's like a form of consent.
Right.
We don't have that law here in Illinois. And when you're outside, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy because you're out in public.
Even in your yard. Because that's kind of private property, right? Like the side of a house or something.
So this is the interesting thing about that case. You know, you have a choice about where you direct that camera. Are you directing it into your neighbor's yard? But the thing that I think is really fascinating about it is that these Ring cameras can record audio. And they record audio up to about 30 feet. And in Illinois, we have a law called the eavesdropping statute that prevents people from listening in to private conversations via audio. So maybe it doesn't matter so much if your house is set back and you've got a lot of distance between the sidewalk and your front door, maybe more than 30 feet, you're not going to catch those conversations. But here in Chicago, if you're walking around the block, those doorbell cameras are right out on the sidewalk. And I don't know about you, but I've had some private conversations walking around on a sidewalk that I wouldn't want to get recorded.
Yeah.
And I think that people just need to be mindful of those obligations and be careful about what they record.
And I have a very loud voice, so I don't think 30 feet even covers me. I'm sure 70 feet Ring doorbells. People all over my neighborhood are probably like, this Hanson is just yapping. I want to just make sure I got this right. So the visual of you outside, that's fine because you don't have that right to privacy. But the audio of what you're saying, you do expect a right to that private conversation. So obviously, for the most part, these video files get deleted, right? But so what's someone supposed to do? I mean, what's the safe practice in a practical sense? Don't publish what you hear. If you overhear a conversation, you hear it. Don't put it anywhere. Just delete it. Or is it like, no, you need to change the settings on your camera so that nothing would ever happen and it would never come to court or anything like that?
I think in an ideal world, you'd want to adjust those settings so you don't inadvertently capture conversations that aren't meant.
Because even the capturing of it is illegal then.
If you intend to capture that conversation, it's illegal. It has to be surreptitious.
Okay.
So if you do it inadvertently or accidentally, that's probably a pretty good defense.
Okay.
What you wouldn't want to do is sit on your couch and turn it on and try to record people as they walk by you, because that's a little bit close to the line.
Yeah.
I think the safe practice is, if you have these types of cameras, to protect your own privacy, what you want to do is delete the recordings as soon as you can.
Right. And if you don't need it, which most of the time it's recording all that, you really don't need it. And go ahead and delete that for sure. Let's talk about nanny cams. A really interesting case out of Pennsylvania. The Supreme Court kind of providing clarity on what nannies should expect when they enter a home. And obviously this is a Pennsylvania case, so help us provide the context here for Illinois. But basically the Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, hey, look, it's even called a nanny cam. They're everywhere. So the expectation should be that if you are working in someone else's home, that, yeah, there's a chance that you're going to be recorded. Am I interpreting what their ruling was, essentially?
Exactly. You know, if you have a nanny at your house, you're an employer. You're operating a workplace. And it is legal for household employers to install a hidden camera to monitor what's happening in the home for safety reasons. It's legal in Illinois to put a nanny cam in a nursing home with knowledge and with consent for safety reason. Again, it's the audio recording that causes a problem sometimes. And of course, you can't put these cameras in spaces that are meant to be private, like a bathroom
right.
or a bedroom, things of that nature.
You mentioned a hidden camera. I just want to make sure that that was correct. Do you have to tell the nanny in Illinois that there's a camera in the house before they start working?
I would think that advising the nanny that you have a camera is the best policy.
Right.
You know, knowledge, consent, notice, that's generally the way to fix privacy violations.
But if you capture him or her bad-mouthing you via audio and you fire that person because of the audio you captured of them, that would be considered wrong, right? Because as you said, they're not supposed to record the audio of that situation.
Not supposed to record the audio without notice and consent. So the video is fine. I think the audio could be problematic.
Sometimes the audio is the juicy stuff. That's what you really want. When you see him or her walking on the phone talking, I'm like, what are they saying about me? No, don't do that. Do not record the audio. Interesting stuff. I imagine, Jeffrey, as the technology changes and advances so much, privacy law is really being written on a whim quickly, sometimes even behind the technology. In fact, probably most of the time, well behind the technology. And then as this plays out judicially, I imagine that this is going to be way behind. So it's just an interesting time as we adjust to what is possible technologically.
Sure. A lot of these laws were written when the biggest form of privacy violations was a predator drilling a hole in a wall to watch other people get undressed or something like that.
Right.
Now, all of us carry these devices in our pocket every day.
Right, exactly. All right, 312-981-7200. If you have any questions about employment law, got any questions about non-disclosure agreements, we'll be chatting about that in a little bit. And about that biometric information. Oh, and actually, Jeff, I just wanted to follow up because you said something interesting in the break when we were talking. Because, yeah, people are working from home now more than ever. But when you until you think, they're not going to collect any biometric information on me. Not necessarily. If you're using their computer, they have a way to capture how often you're checking your email, how often you're logging in, that sort of stuff, right?
They can monitor employees from remote locations in all sorts of ways. Yep.
Wow. Okay. So you're not safe even there. Be aware of what's possible and not. And most importantly, know your rights. Why don't you give out that phone number again one more time, Jeffrey?
You got it. 312-374-5305.
Great stuff. All right, more with Jeffrey after the news, which is coming up next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom here on WGN. Let's Get Legal here, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Hey, later in the program, we're going to play, I'm going to play you clips from very famous courtroom scenes in TVs or movies, TV shows or movies. And you've got to call in and tell us which one it is. So that's going to be a lot of fun. That'll be at the end of the show. But more with Jeffrey Colvin about employment law, non-disclosure agreements, and your questions coming up after the news here on WGN. Thank you very much, Ron. John Hansen here. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We've got one more hour left in this program, and it's going to be a good one. We're going to talk about non-disclosure agreements. And what is a toxic workplace? It's a word or a phrase that's been used a lot lately. And half my brain, when I feel like I've been in a quote-unquote toxic workplace, not here at WGN, by the way, other places, you know, half the time you wonder, you're like, am I just being soft? Am I just being a baby? Shouldn't places, workplaces aren't supposed to be all lovey-dovey? And I think we kind of get torn. So I think we're going to try and figure out exactly what a toxic workplace is and when it's maybe gone too far. And we're going to have some fun at the end of the show, too, talking about favorite TV courtroom and movie scenes that take place in the courtroom here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. We're talking about a lot of different things here today. Thanks so much for joining us. And if you have any questions along the way, 312-981-7200. Jeffrey Colwin, our guest from Colwin, Mashapinto and Colwin, as you heard. And Jeffrey, so you're one of the Colwins. Who's the other one?
The other Colwin is my Uncle Shelley.
Okay, well, that's nice.
Yes.
Very good. And, you know, you and I were talking before during the break, and not to put you on the spot, but you said something really profound to me, that lawyers really are public servants. And you do a lot of work with folks that may not even be end up being clients, but have questions. And that's something you enjoy and want to help people out with.
Sure. I think that it's an important part of my job to help spread information. Lots of people have questions. Not everybody has a case that
right.
they want to bring. But, you know, disseminating information helps achieve the mission of making better workplaces for everybody.
Yeah, amen to that. Let's, continuing on the privacy and the cameras thing, one more story I wanted to get to before non-disclosure agreements. And that has to do with Airbnbs. And I've stayed in a lot of Airbnbs, and I have never once wondered, is there a camera somewhere in this Airbnb? Is that something I should at least be thinking about and wondering? Or would a host tell me if there was a camera? Or I guess ideally they would.
I think to be legal, they would tell you that there's a camera and you would have to consent to being in that room with the camera. But that's not always the case. I think unfortunately in this day and age, it's something you need to be aware of. I did a case once where a doctor put a secret camera in a locker room and recorded women without their knowledge and consent. How would they know? These days, you can buy devices that you can walk into a room and scan the room and look for cameras. And I think, unfortunately, that is the reality today. To protect yourself, you need to take those steps.
This one story out of South Carolina was horrifying to read about because the victims didn't know they were being recorded until an agent of the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division told them they were. So they must have captured the images from somewhere else on the internet, I don't know how, and they had to go and tell the victims, hey, this is what happened. That's horrifying.
Yeah, imagine, you know, you think you're in this space, you think that it's private, and everything that you do in private is being observed or captured by somebody else. It's a little creepy.
Should that be something we ask our Airbnb hosts, just as like a, because there's often like that back and forth where you're getting settling the check-in procedure. Is it maybe just good practice? I mean, I don't know if there's any legally binding by that, but maybe it would deter someone who was even thinking about doing it if you said, hey, by the way, I'm just curious, just making sure, are there any cameras in the house?
That would be a great way to protect yourself.
Right.
If you did that and found out later that there was a camera, they didn't tell you the truth, you should give me a call.
Right. My only worry is they'd be like, no, but why are you asking me? I'd be like, are you going to have a party? I'm like, no. I just want to just make sure that I know my rights and what's happening. All right, let's talk about non-disclosure agreements. We hear about these all the time, and a lot of private enterprises and companies have them. And I think that's pretty standard. Is it standard, actually, Jeffrey? Do a lot of companies have non-disclosure agreements? And do you have any sense of what percentage of companies have them or not?
Sure. Well, non-disclosure agreements arose out of business-to-business relationships, a manufacturer's meeting with a factory, and they want to share private information. That's typically where it came, was originated. But nowadays, I think about one-third of the U.S. workforce is subject to a non-disclosure agreement, also known as an NDA.
What about government employees? And this is where we're going to circle around with the city of Markham, which is requiring employees to sign non-disclosure agreements that broadly restrict taxpayer-funded workers, any government employee, from discussing city business, according to documents from the city in this article from The Trib. Is that a little bit more rare for town employees, for county employees, city employees, to have to sign NDAs?
It is a little rare for a government employer to have an NDA. Typically, transparency about government business is a part of our legal system.
Right.
And so it's counterintuitive to have an NDA. What type of city business is really protectable to be kept secret? Typically, those things are personal identification information for employees or ongoing criminal investigations. But city business isn't the type of thing that you would think of as being confidential or protectable by an NDA.
I imagine that where this kind of the rubber meets the road with government employees is Illinois Freedom of Information Act, right? And us, you know, as journalists, FOIAing information from employees that are taxpayer funded, we as journalists and as citizens have a right to know, to a certain extent, what's happening in our government.
Exactly. I did a case once with a woman who was not promoted because she was a woman. When the case got settled, the municipality wanted a non-disclosure agreement. We signed off. 3 weeks after the case was settled, somebody FOIA'd the agreement, and it became public.
Wow. That's amazing. So even if there is an NDA signed, oftentimes the FOIA itself will reveal what happened.
True. The other thing, really, for government employees is that everybody's got First Amendment rights. You have the right to free speech. You can't have an employer restricting your speech in certain ways. And so I think that both of those present challenges for the enforceability of NDAs in a public employment context.
What should someone do? I mean, should someone take an NDA if they're being asked to sign something at work, an NDA, even if it's like standard boilerplate language? Is it advisable to have someone else take a look at what it is? Is that even allowed? Can I, like, if I have a lawyer, a family lawyer or something, or someone like you, can I just bring the NDA for someone else to even look at?
I would think that any employer would allow you an opportunity to have somebody take a look at it. Here in Illinois, in 2019, we have the Illinois Workplace Transparency Act, which went into effect. And what that act basically says is that NDAs are unenforceable unless they meet certain conditions. And one of them is providing notice about what can and what cannot be kept confidential.
Interesting. So other than that, though, they're unenforceable in many ways.
Unless they're mutually agreed to.
Okay. All right. Unless they're mutually agreed to.
Exactly.
All right. That's the world of NDAs. We're going to talk about toxic workplaces after this here on WGN. All right. I've got about 10 minutes left here with Jeffrey Colwin of Colwin, Mashapinto and Colwin. And Jeffrey, really quickly, I want to reiterate to folks, because they can reach out to you and the folks at your office and what you do. So what sorts of people are you, do you help out? Is it mainly employees? Like, what would be a reason someone would want to give you a call if they're listening right now?
Sure. I think that if you have a problem or a concern relating your employment or a business dispute or the violation of your civil rights, you should give me a call.
So privacy rights fall into that too?
Sure.
Even if it doesn't have anything to do with employment?
Even if it doesn't have anything to do with employment.
Yeah, because we bring you on as an employment expert, but your range is broader than that as well.
I focus a lot of my practice on employment law, but there's a lot of things that spring out of that, such as privacy rights and whistleblowers, for example, things of that nature.
Have you always been interested in that line of work, or is that something that after you started law, you sort of, meandered your way into it?
I found when I first became a lawyer that people's jobs are really important to them. It defines who they are. It gives them a sense of dignity. And I've just always been drawn to helping people sort of fulfill, self-achieve their career goals.
And do you think that in the last 10 or 15 years, the idea of what a workplace is and how it relates to me individually and my happiness has changed enough that, in fact, a lot of people are reaching out to you now because they are taking stock in what their job means to them on the whole?
I think the transformation that has occurred over the last few years has been the raising of awareness of what should and what should not take place in the workplace. And I think that benefits everybody.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 312-981-7200, by the way, if you have any specific questions. All right, let's talk about toxic workplaces. And I think a lot of people will say, well, you know a toxic workplace when you see it. But I don't think it's as cut and dry as that, Jeffrey, because I think sometimes you might have a toxic, quote unquote, boss. But that doesn't mean the whole workplace is toxic. Sometimes you may have employees that you disagree with. Does that make it a toxic workplace? So is there a definition that you, I mean, obviously it's not a legal term, but if someone says to you, I work at a toxic workplace, what elements do you think really contribute to that?
I think the key things in a toxic that would define a toxic workplace would be a place where employees are not treated with dignity or respect. Doesn't necessarily mean it's unlawful. Lots of employment actions are unjust or unfair. But when you have a workplace where employees are not being treated with dignity and respect, it becomes toxic in that it grates on you. It makes it hard to come to work every day.
Yeah, because I think that's a hard line to navigate, because I think there's this generational shift, right? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. A lot of the newer folks in the workplace, I'm an older millennial, but young millennials and Gen Z, they like a good workplace culture. They like to fight for it. They want a forward-thinking company a lot of times. They want their, you know, PTO to be matching. They want them, you know, to have bosses that are not necessarily friends, but friendly to them. And a lot of people might roll their eyes at it, but I think that a younger generation is making the workplace better for a lot of people who would just put their head down in the sand and say, well, whatever, it's a job.
I would agree with that. I think that the raising of awareness is what keeps everybody on the right side of the law and helps keep workplaces from becoming toxic. That's bad for everybody if it's toxic.
So let's talk about this Jeff Bezos story. 21 current and former employees of Jeff Bezos' Blue Origin claim that the space company is a toxic workplace. This according to an essay posted on Thursday, led by former Blue Origin head of employment communications, Alexander Abrams. The essay claims that the company pushes workers to sign strict non-disclosure agreements, like we talked about, stifles internal feedback, disregards safety concerns, and creates a sexist environment for women. And it gives examples of alleged sexual harassment. Now, that has crossed the line, if those allegations are correct. Now, that crosses the line from something that is not legally in the realm of something you can talk about to actually things that are illegal, right? Like, once you start talking about safety concerns and sexist environments, that's where someone like you would get involved, correct?
Sure. Typically, non-disclosure agreements are unenforceable against things that employees would report that would be unlawful to the government or to law enforcement. And I think that's what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting to see that, especially even a company, because you would think that these tech companies, they're usually like the forefront of like having the pool table in the break room and stuff like that. I think it just goes to show that even companies that claim to be these forward-thinking companies still can have blind spots, Jeff.
For sure. And think about that, what you just said. 21 employees were a part of that letter, but only one was brave enough to sign her name.
Well, that's amazing. Let's go to the phone lines, by the way, 312-981-7200. And we're going to go to Andrew in Mount Prospect. Andrew, how are you doing here this evening?
I'm doing great. This is a great topic, and thank you so much for taking the call.
Yeah, of course.
So,
go ahead.
I have a tremendous employee, and I'm underscoring tremendous. He is a tremendous employee. And it's a dress code issue.
Okay.
And I don't know how to say this. He wears his pants down below, and you see his underwear exposed.
Okay.
And I don't know how to handle this.
So
he's a great employee.
Right, and he's an employee. So you're not just saying anyone that does that on the street is wrong. You're not going into that world. You're just saying that from an employer perspective, that is could be harmful for the workplace.
We have a business casual atmosphere. Now, he is a freelance, not an employee, and I don't know if that makes a difference.
So is your question how to enforce it, how to enforce a dress code the right way?
Yeah, and how to say something. I'm just at a loss for words.
Interesting. Jeffrey, what do you think? I mean, would it depend on what the dress code situation is? Are there laws in Illinois about what can or can't be dress code? What do you think about a situation? I know that's got to be difficult to navigate for employers.
For sure, and that's a great question. I think the best practice to use in a situation like that is to have a reasonable basis for having the dress code in the first place, communicate the dress code to everybody that it would affect, and treat everybody the same with respect to that dress code.
Andrew, do you have a dress code like written down that all the employees or people that work with you know about?
We do. It's in our handbook, but I guess you could say that it's my fault because, again, he's freelance. He's not on the payroll. He comes and goes when we need him. But when he's in the building, everybody comes to me. I need to somehow get around this.
Interesting. Yeah, Jeff, I think that having a respectful conversation is probably the first place to start, yeah?
Sure. And it doesn't matter if that person is an employee or a contractor. Andrew, it sounds like you are the employer. You get to set the rules as long as they're fair and reasonable and apply to everybody equally.
Andrew, I got to say that I appreciate that you're entering the conversation from a point of, hey, this is a really good worker, and you're just trying to enforce, you know, for particular reasons. And I just wanted to ask you as a quick aside, has hiring been really tough? You don't have to tell me what line of work you do, but I imagine that this new world is tough for employers as well.
We can't believe it. We've been looking for customer service people. And for the last 3 months, and we've gotten 2 applications, which is absolutely unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, that's hopefully that rectifies itself or gets a little bit better in the next couple months, because while the employees do have a lot of power now, there should be some sort of balance. And, of course, we don't want to impact small businesses, local businesses like yours. Well, Andrew, it sounds like you've got a groundwork to start having that conversation respectfully, okay?
Thank you for taking the call.
Yeah, sounds good. I think that when you hear someone like Andrew, who just seems like a really, I mean, I don't know him, but he would call a reasonable employer. You know, those are workplaces where, you know, not every boss is out to demean employees, right? I think we sometimes have this mantra that, like, oh, the boss, forget the boss, all that. There are a lot of great bosses out there that really do want to have those respectful conversations.
I think so. I think Andrew's question illustrates the fact that the awareness has been raised that you have to treat people with a certain amount of respect.
That's great. 312-981-7200, probably going to be out of time, but if you do have a question, we can write it down for Jeffrey afterwards. So, Jeffrey, once again, I wanted to just have you make sure, because you were so generous to give us an hour today. You gave us cookies, for goodness sake. Why don't you give out the phone number again where people can reach you with any more of these great questions?
Yes, you can call me directly, 312-374-5305.
It's radio, so say it one more time, and do it in a really great radio voice.
312-374-5305.
That was very good. That's very good. Do you guys have a website, too, you want to direct people to as well?
Absolutely. KMKLawLLP.com is the website for my firm, and I have a blog, JeffreyColwin.com.
And what I always tell people, if they can't figure out the website, just Google it. Google Jeffrey Cole when you'll find the website, phone number, everything like that.
Google me.
Google him. Jeffrey, it really has been great to chat with you, and I know we'll talk again soon because, as we've talked about, employment law ain't going anywhere, and we've got a lot of interesting cases in the near future. Thanks, Jeffrey.
Well, thanks for having me, John, and thanks for helping to raise awareness about these important issues.
For sure. All right, till next time, we'll chat, and now time for the news here on WGN. All right, continuing on with our conversation that we had with Jeffrey Colwin about toxic workplaces, producer Iridian printed out this great article, and I can tell it's great because it's got a picture of the office cast on it as well. But we're talking about toxic workplaces and that fine line of, like, what's toxic versus what is really great and striving. You kind of know it when you see it, but there's this article from Business Insider about what drives high-performing teams. A new survey from Ignite 80, a learning development company, says that high-performing team members in offices act more like friends than coworkers. And I really agree with that. And I know that's like an old, you know, that's like against the old way of thinking that your coworkers are your coworkers, not your friends. But team members are more likely that use GIFs and emojis on text chains with each other, that they discuss non-work matters, they perform higher. Including surveys that high-performing teams are more likely to joke around, they're more likely to swear around other coworkers than low-performing teams. The closer people feel to their colleagues, the more productive they become. They gossip a little bit even, and that's like seen as like a big, big no-no in the office place. But apparently teams that gossip together do really well together and perform well. So just kind of an addendum to that employment conversation, that there are lessons for managers out there to kind of allow some of that fun to be happening in your workplace. And I definitely feel that way. I'm way happier in an environment where, you know, there's a text group with all your employees, with all your friends at your office, and you joke about things and you allow gossip to happen. Anyways, not really a legal story, but I did enjoy that one already, and thanks for having that on here. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation, and more importantly, if you would like to play our game. So we were going to do this last week, but the question of the day took forever, and we didn't get an answer. Today, we already got our answer to the question of the day, which, if you're just joining us, was 120,000 Americans every single day do what? And we took a few calls, and I think his name was Travis, came up with the guess that it's get a driving ticket or a speeding ticket. And that was the answer. I'll have another question of the day for you before the show ends. But here's what we're going to do now. We're going to play a game where I play a clip from a movie or a TV show, and you've got to tell me, it's a courtroom scene, this is Let's Get Legal after all, and you've got to tell me the movie or TV show that it is from. So get ready to play, 312-981-7200, and we'll actually give you the first clip here now. And whether you know it or you don't, if you want to play along, get on the phone lines, 312-981-7200. Iridian, you ready for it? All right, here is your first clue.
A fair sentence. Objection, do you think they deserve to die, Mr. Henry? Answer the question.
Carly, don't answer that question.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
312-981-7200. Do you know what movie that is. And if you do, call in 312-981-7200, and we'll get some other players on the line, too, and hopefully we'll have some other clips and have a winner. Can we get ready to play that one more time already? And here it is one more time.
A fair sentence.
Objection,
do you think they deserve to die, Mr. Hennig? Answer
Mr.
the question.
Carly, don't answer that question.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
That's Sam Jackson, by the way, in case anyone needed that. 312-981-7200. If you'd like to play our little game, we'll get some callers on now, and we'll play and wrap up the show coming up here on WGN. This is Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I'm John Hansen, and we like to finish the show with a fun game. And today it's Name That TV or Movie Courtroom Scene. I'm going to get a couple callers on the line here and introduce our contestants. Rob, how are you doing, Rob?
Good, how are you?
Good. Where are you calling in from here, Rob?
Shabana.
Where's that?
It's west of Aurora.
I'm a little
Hinkley, Big Rock.
I know those. Yeah, I was a traffic reporter for many years, including here at WGN. Shabana. Well, I'm embarrassed to say I don't know. Tell us a little bit about Shabana.
Well, we're actually camping out here at the state park.
Oh, okay. So you don't know all the ins and outs.
No, last I had heard, it had like the most bars per capita in Illinois, that's all.
Now I really don't know why I've never been there. All right, great. Well, I hope you're enjoying camping. I'm going to put you here on the line, and we'll get to our other callers. Casey on the north side. Casey, how you doing?
How are you doing tonight, Chris?
I'm doing very well, Casey. Where are you calling? You're calling from the north side? What are you up to here this evening?
Well, actually, I'm getting ready to get into a store to do some late night ballot swapping, you could say, but it closed out. So,
okay,
if you sit here in the parking lot, we can be okay to get in.
All right, well, we'll lock you in here, Casey, or if you don't mind doing that, and we'll meet our third contestant. It's Randy from Dixon. Randy, how are you doing here today?
Pretty good.
All right, where are you, what are you up to on this Saturday evening?
Well, I just shut down. I was combining corn all day, and just getting ready to go home.
All right, sounds good. We got Rob, we got Randy. Unfortunately, I think we might have lost the other contestant. That's okay, we'll get him on back. Let's lock Randy in, and let's talk to Paul. Paul, you're calling from Chicago. How are you doing this evening?
I actually am coming back from Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, Champaign.
That's on the road.
That's my alma mater.
I'm sorry?
That's my alma mater. Did you watch? Well, the Illini were in Penn State today, so what were you doing in Champaign?
Actually, I was visiting our daughter. She's a student at Champaign, Illinois.
Oh, nice. Very good. Very good. All right, Paul. So I think Rob, Randy, and Paul, let's go ahead and play that first clip again for that first clue, Iridian.
A fair sentence.
Objection,
do you think they deserve to die, Mr. Hennig? Answer
Mr.
the question.
Berkeley. Carly, don't answer that question.
Yes, they deserve to die, and I hope they burn in hell.
All right. So, Rob, you called first. Do you know what movie that is from?
Was it Mississippi Burning?
No, not Mississippi Burning. Good guess, though. Let's go to Randy. Randy, do you know what movie that's from?
A Time to Kill.
A Time to Kill. Yes, Randy with the first point. But that's okay, Paul and Rob. We got a couple more clues here for you. Let's go with the next one. Iridian's getting it queued up. And
sorry,
here we go.
I'm late, folks.
Where were you?
Where you'd have to step up?
Harvey, I know these briefs backwards.
Well, then, fair's fair. Heads, I'll take it. Tails, he's all yours.
Yeah, you want to flip a coin to see who leads?
It's my father's lucky coin. As I recall, it got me my first date with you.
I wouldn't leave something like that up to chance.
I don't. I make my own luck.
All rise. The Honorable Judge Freeman presiding.
I thought the DA just played golf with the mayor, things like that.
Tee-off's 1:30. More than enough time to put you...
All right, so you heard a flip of a coin. We heard some other things. Paul, this is going to be your guess. Any idea what movie that is from?
Tough one. First one was, but this one is...
That's okay. That's a tough one. So you don't... Any guesses?
Actually, no.
Okay, Randy, any idea what that's from?
No, sir, I don't. I don't know if I've ever seen that show.
Yeah,
a movie.
It's a movie. It involves the two faces of a coin flip. It was filmed here in Chicago, and it's of the Batman franchise. Paul, did I help you out at all there? No, Paul, any other guesses?
No.
All right. Well, no one got it. That is The Dark Knight. That is from The Dark Knight. Yes. That was a tough one. These are tough because as we play this game more and more, there's less and less court seems to deal with. All right, so Randy and Paul, stay on the line. Let's go with clue number three.
But what I do like is that I live in a country where you and I can make that decision for ourselves. I like that I live in a country where I can pick up Hustler magazine and read it if I want to, or throw it in the garbage can if that's where I think it belongs. Or better yet, I can exercise my opinion and not buy it. I like that I have that right. I care about it. And you should care about it, too.
The right to to pick up a Hustler magazine. Randy, any guesses on that one?
You know, I've seen that movie, and I'm trying to think of the name of it. I can tell you who the main characters are and everything else, but I won't do that right now.
All right.
I'm going to have to let the other fellow take a chance.
Paul, any guesses?
I watched that movie just maybe a couple of weeks ago, but I just lost
it. At the tip of your tongue?
Yeah, same thing
to me. All right, I'll give you.
Oh my God!
I'll give you a clue, Randy. I'll give you one word on it that might help you out. Larry, does that help you come up with the name of it?
Well, the movie was about Larry Flint.
Yes.
I know that. And Woody Harrelson played Larry Flint.
Well, tell you what, I'll give you each a half a point. It's The People versus Larry Flint. You got there pretty close. It's a great movie. It really is. All right.
It's entertaining.
Yeah. Okay. He doesn't go as far as saying great, but okay. Let's go to clip. This is a tough one. This is clip number four.
I was stuck in an elevator for 2 hours, and I had to make the whole time. But I don't blame them, because one time I turned into a dog, and they helped me. Thank you.
Very good, Lewis. Short, but pointless.
All right, that is clip one from this movie. Paul, do you have any ideas what that is?
No.
Yeah, that's a tough one. Randy, any clue?
No, and it's somewhat familiar, but I don't recall that one. Well, I can say I actually had seen The Dark Knight, but didn't remember that.
All right, well, tell you what, we've got another clip from the same movie, and from the same courtroom scene, just a little bit later. Let's play that.
So you were just trying to help out a friend.
Who was frightened.
Who was scared of what was happening to her.
No,
and when you're scared, what?
There was no evil intent.
There was no evil intended, no malice.
No, I live here.
Because you live here, when you live in a place and you love it like you do, you don't want nothing bad to happen. What?
It was an isolated.
Because it'll never happen again. It's an isolated incident. It's a one-shot deal.
Objection, Your Honor.
What?
He's leading the witness.
Sustained.
Give me a break. We're both lawyers.
Mr. Tully. You have any questions for this witness? Might have some bearing on this case.
Do I?
No, we've helped them out enough already.
All right, that is Rick Moranis and Bill Murray in their interaction. Paul, does that help you get the name of the movie?
No, this is a tough one. No.
It is really tough. Randy, any guesses?
I'm thinking it's Ghostbusters 2.
Yes! Yes, it is! Yes, and I had no... I've seen that movie maybe once. Because
should lose points just for admitting I saw that movie. It was terrible.
You're right, it was. And I remember the goo in the subway. Like, that's like the one thing I remember watching. Yes, doesn't live up to Ghostbusters 1, but yeah, it's Rick Moranis. He acts as a lawyer. And that's why that first clip, it kind of had a clue. He says, I got turned into a dog, referencing the first one. But that certainly helped out.
And I didn't put any of that together, but that clue that you gave us kept it in for me.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell the voices.
They're getting a little harder here. All right, here's the last one, and this is a television show. Go ahead, Radium.
Dark as pitch, when out the mist came a beast more stomach than man.
Hey!
So I says to me bosuns, batten down the mizzenmast, mateys.
Captain McAllister, isn't it a fact that you're not a real captain?
Aye.
All right. Paul, any guesses what television show that is?
No.
Randy, any guesses?
That's The Simpsons.
Yes, that is The Simpsons. That is the famous scene and where I think Homer ate the all-you-can-eat, and he didn't get enough filling, and they didn't have enough food, I believe. And then they mock Miracle on 34th Street by wheeling in all the lobsters or something like that. Oh, that's a great courtroom scene. Paul, I'm sorry you didn't get that one, but thanks for playing, my friend.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Pleasure.
And thank you. I hope you had a great visit to visit down at University of Illinois. And Randy, you had a long day today, but you are our winner today. Congratulations.
Well, thank you.
The prize is that if you ever need me, I'll represent you in a court of law, even though I'm not a lawyer, have never passed the bar, and I won't do you any good, okay?
Well, that doesn't really do a heck of a lot of good for me because I can use a lawyer sometimes.
Well, I'll help you. You know, tell you what, I obviously know a lot of lawyers because we have them on this show. You ever need it, you call us, 312-981-7200. We'll try and get you hooked up with the right person because it won't be me. All right, Randy?
I appreciate the help, sir, and I enjoyed the day.
Yeah, have a great day, and thanks for all your hard work doing what you do. All right, everyone, we'll wrap things up next here on WGN. And I really appreciate Jeffrey Colwin for giving us an entire hour today. A lot of really interesting topics in the world of employment. And Colwin Mashapinto and Colwin, you can go to kmklawllp.com. Or just Google them, as I always say. That'll get you the right answer. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in today. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association, where we try to give you a fun look at what's happening in the legal world, with the experts doing most of the talking and me doing a lot of the listening and the dumb questions, and we have some fun along the way, too. What's up next here on WGN will be Peter Greenberg. Next week on Saturday, you'll hear Let's Get Legal at 1 in the afternoon for a one-hour show. We'll go from 1 to 2 and take you up to Northwestern Wildcat pregame. Again, that's next Saturday, 1 to 2. Our question of the day for that day, if you want to start working on it, is that by age 23, 30.2% of Americans have what? By the age of 23, 30.2% of Americans have what? We'll answer that question next week, 1 o'clock on Let's Get Legal. I wanted to give a big thanks to 773 texted in that we were at the Hawks game on Tuesday. It was so good to see you, John, on the video board. Thank you so much. I'll be there tomorrow as well at 3 o'clock for the Hawks game. 6 o'clock, excuse me. Feel free to come up to Section 312 and say hello.